ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। क्वचित् स्नातो नुलिप्ताङ्गा सुवासास्रग्वलङ्कृता रथे भास्वैश्चरे चापि दिग्वासाग्रहवाद्भिभो।
ओ माय लॉर्ड, समटाइम्स आई बेथ वेरी नाइसली, स्मीर सैंडलवुड पल्प ऑल ओवर माय बॉडी, पुट ऑन अ फ्लावर गार्लैंड एंड ड्रेस इन फाइन गार्मेंट्स एंड ऑर्नमेंट्स। Then I travel like a king on the back of an elephant, on a chariot or horse. Sometimes, however, I travel naked, like a person haunted by a ghost.
Naham ninde janastomi swabhava vishamam janam etesham sreyat ashase utaikatmyam mahatmani.
Different people are of different mentalities. Therefore, it is not my business either to praise them or to blaspheme them. I only desire their welfare, hoping that they will agree to become one with the Supersoul, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna. Purport by His Divine Grace, Srila A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. As soon as one comes to the platform of Bhakti Yoga, one understands fully the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vasudev, is the goal of life. Vasudeva Saravam Iti Samahatma Sadurlabha. This is the instruction of all Vedic literature. Vedaishta Saravairaham Eva Vedya Saravadharaman Parityajamam Ekam Sharanam Braja. There is no use in praising someone for material qualifications or blaspheming him for material disqualifications. In the material world, good and bad have no meaning, because if one is good, he may be elevated to a higher planetary system, and if one is bad, he may be degraded to the lower planetary systems. People of different mentalities are sometimes elevated and sometimes degraded, but this is not the goal of life. Rather, the goal of life is to become free from elevation and degradation and take to Krishna consciousness. Therefore, a saintly person does not discriminate between that which is supposedly good and supposedly bad. Rather, he desires for everyone to become happy in Krishna consciousness, which is the ultimate goal of life. Different people are of different mentalities. Therefore, it is not my business either to praise them or to blaspheme them. I only desire their welfare, hoping that they will agree to become one with the Supersoul, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The great Brahman, speaking with Prahlad Maharaj, is sharing with us his realizations, the realizations by which hearing can enlighten one to detach oneself from the fruitive endeavors of this world and attach oneself only to the lotus feet of those great sadhus who are dedicated in the service to the Lord. He is describing here how the spirit soul, in its process of transmigrating through the 8,400,000 species of life, has practically seen and considered everything. He is describing that I have been a king, living in palatial palaces, wearing crown, silken robes, fine ornaments, traveling on backs of elephants or on beautiful chariots and horses. And he describes that sometimes
I find myself traveling like a naked madman, people thinking that I'm haunted by a ghost. Indeed, in this world there are so many varieties of matters, of ways to enjoy or suffer. But after being through all of them, one realizes the futility of material life. In fact, we read in Srimad Bhagavatam how the Lord puts the living entity in a situation in this world where he can see and consider all alternatives until every last hope is exhausted and one is convinced that there's no other shelter than Krishna. Then you have to continue traveling, experiencing newer varieties of methods to try to be happy. In the story of the young servant's, the maidservant's son, which is found in First Canto, it is described that he was just an ordinary maidservant's boy. But by the grace of God, he was given the association of sadhus. They were living in the forest. And during the Chaturmasya, a group of Mahabhagavats, highly elevated spiritual personalities, happened to stay in the forest for those 4 months. And he had the opportunity of hearing from them and rendering service to them, even taking the sanctified prasad from their plates. In fact, hearing from the great souls and rendering service to the great souls is the first and foremost process of purification. Sometimes we preach that the chanting of the holy name is the most important process in Kali Yuga. But factually, preliminary to chanting the holy names is to hear and render service to the great souls, because it is through their mercy that we learn how to chant the holy names properly. It is said in Bhagavatam, Nasta Preshya Bhadreshu Nityam Bhagavati Sevaya Bhagavati Uttamo Sloke Bhaktir Bhavati Naishtaki, that by regularly hearing the Bhagavat philosophy and by rendering service to those persons who are enunciating Bhagavat philosophy by their life and words, then great service is done. And the Lord in the heart, taking great pleasure in our activities, purifies us of all material contaminations and reveals himself from within our own heart. So this young maidservant's son, hardly even literate, he was given the great fortune by the gift of God to hear from great souls and to become their menial servant. This is the process and the only process to make proper spiritual advancement, to hear from the great souls and to become their menial servant. What does it mean to become menial servant? This young boy, he was not thinking himself of any qualification whatsoever. He was just thinking it was by the great mercy of God that he was being allowed to bring them some prasad, to clean up after them, to just ask, is there anything I can do for you, and do it. That is the perfection of life. No one should ever consider that his service is so great, so important, that it warrants credit. Because if you are thinking like that, that means you are no longer a menial servant. And if you are not a menial servant, you have missed the whole point of Krishna consciousness. Menial means I'm nothing. Whatever little I can do for the devotees, that is the perfection of my life. That is the greatest opportunity I have in my life, just to do something to please the devotees. And because this child was so humble in his submissive oral reception and his desire to serve, he got the heartfelt blessings from the sadhus. A sadhu cannot give his heartfelt blessings unless you approach him in this way. A sadhu is giving his blessings to everyone. But the heartfelt blessings come from one who actually is a desiring recipient of that mercy. And it is only through meekness, humility, and meniality in one's service that the heartfelt blessings of the sadhus comes into one's life. And without those blessings, we cannot approach God. So therefore, when he received the heartfelt blessings, then Krishna was satisfied with him, and Krishna took over his life. Krishna established with him faith. And this child was thinking, my God, I do not want any longer to just sit home and help my mother serve. The sadhus are gone, now what am I going to do? I want to take to the path of God realization. I want to become a renunciate, one who is giving up everything for the service of Krishna. That's what I want. But I'm in this predicament. I have to take care of my aged mother. So while he was thinking like that, by the arrangement of Krishna, who is in the heart of every living being, Iswara sarva bhutanam hriday sherjuna tishtati, brahmayan sarva bhutanam yantra rudani maya. Krishna is directing everyone from within their heart. According to your faith and according to the arrangement he wants to make, he is directing everyone. That is why a devotee should come to the platform of complete fearlessness. Because a devotee has nothing to fear because he knows Krishna is in everyone's heart. And if I'm surrendering to Krishna, Krishna will only allow and direct others to do what I need, what needs to be accepted for my purification. So Krishna, in the heart of a serpent, struck his mother and killed her. And this child, he was the only son, he was just a small boy. He had no one to protect him. He had no one to facilitate his livelihood. But he was thinking that, Krishna is so kind that he has killed my mother. My mother, she's obviously, because she has served the great soul, she's going to some higher destination. There is no doubt about that. But now I am free to completely dedicate all my time to self-realization. And in this spirit of renunciation, which is actually the highest expression of love, even to his mother, a materialist cannot understand this. A materialist would think, how hard-hearted. His mother is dead and he's glad. How is this possible? You see, a saintly person, his compassion is upon the soul. He was fully aware that due to the association of the sadhus, the Mahabhagavats, his mother would become a great devotee in her next life, if not go back to Godhead. And not only that, but he knew full well by hearing from the great souls that whatever spiritual advancement he makes, his mother shares as well. Wherever her soul may be, she gets the credit. So therefore, if I am free to become completely self-realized, if I become perfectly pure, my mother gets liberation or goes back to Godhead. So therefore, the greatest thing that I can do for my mother is become Krishna conscious. And therefore, now I am completely free to become Krishna conscious. So he was feeling actually glad, not only that he was free to serve Krishna without impediments, but he was also feeling glad because he could do the greatest act of love and service as a son to a mother. In Sanskrit, the word putra is the word for a son. Putra means one who delivers his forefathers from hellish conditions. When a son performs the proper oblations in the service of Lord Hari, when the son becomes purified through devotion to God, then whatever sinful karmic reactions his ancestors or his forefathers are maybe suffering or enjoying, they're purified from all those things. and they become liberated in a state of Krishna consciousness. So therefore, this child simply left, and with complete faith in God, he began to travel. And where did he travel? Krishna, within his heart, wanted to give him a full experience of the world, of the material existence. He was simply watching. He was simply observing, trying to see how people were thinking, how people were living, trying to see how Krishna was revealing himself in different circumstances within this world. So Krishna led him through the heart to the big metropolis cities. And he traveled and searched out all the alternatives within those cities. And then he went to the towns and traveled and saw what was taking place in the towns, looking for Krishna consciousness there. And then he went into the little villages. And from the little villages, he traveled into the agricultural fields. From the agricultural fields, he traveled into the forests. And from the forests, he traveled into the deepest, darkest jungles. In this way, he saw how all classes of men were living. In this way, he understood full well through his own realization that there is no alternative except taking complete shelter of Krishna for relief and happiness in this world. He saw the animals in the jungles, the simple field workers in the agricultural fields, the very simple life of the village people, the hard-working life of the townspeople, and the very passionate people of the city. He saw they were all simply enjoying and suffering the results of their past karma. Therefore, he could understand there was really no difference. He could see that the mode of goodness, the mode of passion, and the mode of ignorance are all just temporary situations which afford different varieties of happiness and distress. But in essence, it's all the same. It's all material. It's all temporary. Prahlad Maharaj has said, Mito pipidyet grihabratanam adandagobir vishatam tamishram puna punas charavata charavananam. That only the most foolish person remains within this human life attached to sense gratification. And he spends his valuable time simply chewing that which has already been chewed. All the happinesses and distresses in this world we've already had millions of times. And each time we've been frustrated by them and we're still trying to find more. Prahlad Maharaj has described that this whole process of trying to find pleasure in this world is nothing but chewing that which has already been chewed and chewed and spit out and picked up and chewed again. Therefore, a wise man becomes indifferent to sense gratification and struggles and strives for the higher realizations of God consciousness. So this maidservant son, he gave up all hope of happiness in this world. He had seen everything. As Narottam Das Thakur has said, I have seen and considered this whole world, and without you, Krishna, no one and nothing can save me. That was the realization of this boy. And thus, he sat down in meditation, in prayer, chanting the holy names, and meditating on the Lord within his heart. And when Krishna saw that he had honestly and genuinely given up all hope for happiness anywhere except in him, at that time only did Krishna reveal himself. And when Krishna revealed himself, this child, how beautiful, how wonderful. All my desires are now fulfilled. Simply by the darshan of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, there's nothing to be attained. It has been attained. And then the vision disappeared from his eyes. And he felt so alone in separation, that where is that Lord of my life who has so kindly appeared to me? And he began to perform the same meditation process again, seeking out the beauty of the Lord within his heart, but to no avail. And then the Lord spoke to him. He heard the sweet voice of the Lord within the silence of his own heart. And Bhagavan Sri Krishna spoke to him and told him that I am the Paramatma, and in this life you will not see me again. But because you will have no taste for anything except me, you will be indifferent from all the pleasures and pains of this world, and you will always be longing to see me again. And this longing, this crying to see me, those tears of your longing to see me will wash away all material contaminations and misconceptions within your heart, and in your next birth you will be my eternal associate. You will never forget me. You will see me everywhere and in everything. So that child, for the rest of his life, he simply longed for that vision of Krishna. He was constantly immersed in chanting his name and remembering the Lord. And then that child, in due course of time, left his body. And in the next day of Lord Brahma, he became the son of Brahma. And he is celebrated throughout all the Vedic literatures as the great Narada Muni. That pure soul whose only business is to enlighten others in the path of bhakti, devotion to Sri Hari. So note how he had seen and experienced so much of this world. And this Avadhuta Brahman is echoing the same message. He is describing that we have all seen and considers everything of this world, practically speaking. Why do we keep trying to chew that which has already been chewed? Why are we still trying to find relief and happiness through the process of sense gratification? How many times have you had sense gratification in this birth? What to speak in previous births? And how many times you are frustrated? How many times you are put in hopeless conditions? Sense gratification is hopeless. Material attachment is a hopeless condition. To put our hope in what is hopeless is the greatest illusion. Therefore, this great Brahman is describing how, because he has put his only hope in life in God, in the lotus feet of Krishna, and in the service of his devotees, therefore, he is no longer interested in the phantasmagoria of the glitter of this material existence. And he's describing here that in this world, different people are of different mentalities. According to the three modes of material nature, every person is unique in his consciousness. And therefore, he says, it is not my business to either praise them or blame them. Someone who has material qualities, of course, one who has advanced in spiritual qualities, all saintly persons want to praise such a person. But as far as material qualities, he's saying, it is not my business to praise such people, because those material qualities, Prabhupada explains here, they're all just very superficial. Whether one is elevated to a high position or whether one is degraded to the lowest position, to a saintly person, it makes very little difference. Vidyavanaya sampane brahmani gavihastini sunichayava sopakecha bandita samadarshana. A saintly person sees a highly learned Brahman, an elephant, a cow, a dog, or the lowest of humanity, chandala. He sees them all with equal vision. He says that their particular position in society is just based on their karma.
The Brahman is in the mode of goodness,
and the Chandala is in the mode of ignorance, and the various animals are in different degrees of passion and ignorance. He sees the soul in everyone's heart, and therefore he is the well-wisher of every soul. Therefore, as far as he is concerned, there's no value in material qualifications, so why should I praise someone who has them? And there's no fault in disqualifications. In fact, saintly persons see more glory in disqualifications than qualifications. Queen Kunti was a Mahabhagavat. Queen Kunti was such an elevated soul that she happened to be the very maternal aunt of Lord Sri Krishna. She was the sister of Vasudev, Krishna's paternal father. And therefore, her prayers are so full of devotion and realization that an entire chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, the Mahapurana, is dedicated only to her. And great Paramahamsas have been chanting her prayers with love for thousands and thousands of years, being inspired by her realizations. And she is describing that, my dear Lord Krishna, please cut all my attachments. As far as I am concerned, Krishna, Janmaiswaraya Srutu Sribir Edamana Madapuma Naivarhati Vidatum Vaitwam Akinchana Gocharam. The most fortunate people are those who are impoverished because they are not proud. People with high education, with high birth, with physical beauty, and with lots of money, their tendency is to become very proud. They lose the menial mentality that I am simply the nothing servant of Krishna. And the more you know how great is Krishna, Krishna is everything. When you see everything, when you understand everything in the form of the glory of God, then you realize that you are nothing, so infinitesimally small that there's nothing to say about yourself. There's nothing to think about yourself. Just think about Krishna. Think about how great is Krishna. As long as you think you're great, you cannot understand Krishna's greatness. But as soon as you realize that you are nothing, then your heart is completely open to appreciate the glory and greatness of Krishna and the glory of his devotees. So that is a fact. We are nothing. And if we think we're something, then we're more nothing than nothing. We're less nothing than nothing. And that is the mentality that we should strive to acquire through the service of the Lord and his devotees. So therefore, what is there to praise or blame? Queen Kunti is saying that this false pride is such an impediment in spiritual life that I consider that you, my dear Lord Krishna, are akinchana gocharam. You are the property of the impoverished. You are never the property of the proud. The Bible says pride cometh before the fall. So therefore, what about great kings? The Bhagavatam is describing such powerful and distinguished personalities who were kings. In the 12th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, it describes what qualifications a literature must have to be an authorized Purana. And one of the qualifications is that it must tell great histories of great kings of the past. And we read that Srimad Bhagavatam is constantly talking about Maharaj Priyavrat, Maharaj Agnitra, Maharaj Rishabdev, Maharaj Bharat, Maharaj Ambarish, Maharaj Dhruva, Maharaj Prahlad, Maharaj Parikshit, Maharaj Yudhisthira, Maharaj Ranti Dev, Maharaj Ramchandra, Ugrasena, The list goes on and on and on. The Srimad Bhagavatam is filled with stories of great kings. And they were all, each and every one of these men practically, were pure devotees of Lord Hari. So why couldn't you sing a Kinchana Gocharam? These are kings, they're not impoverished. Krishna is the property only of those who are impoverished, she says. Because in their hearts they were impoverished. Although they were living in palatial buildings with great wealth, incredible intelligence, influence, power, popularity, in their hearts they always felt themselves impoverished, that I am nothing. I am the most menial. I am the most insignificant. But Krishna, by his grace, he's putting me in this position. It's all his. It's all by the blessings of the sadhus that I'm allowed to do this service. But personally, I'm nothing. This is the way all great devotees consider themselves, whatever situation they're in. And therefore, a devotee only sees the humility in a person's heart. He doesn't care anything for anything else about a person. Everything else is superficial, external, and meaningless. A person only sees how one is willing to take the humble position of the menial servant of the servant of the servant. And he praises and glorifies that quality in another. And any other quality, there's nothing to praise. It's all material. And that is what this great Brahman is saying. I do not praise anyone for what they can do, and I do not blame anyone for what they cannot do. This is all karma. This is all meaningless. I only see the surrender of a person. That is what it means to be Krishna conscious. And a devotee simply sees the heart of another. And when he sees that in the heart, he glorifies, he adores that principle. And that is what the Avadhuta Brahman is explaining here. He has no business either praising or blaming anyone for their material conditions of life. He only desires the welfare of all. And really, a sadhu must be on this platform. This is very important. Because if a saintly person is attracted by the facilities that others could give him, then he is no longer impartial. Then he'll be merciful to the wealthy, but couldn't care less about the poor. He'll be very, very anxious to help those who have distinction in society, but those who are illiterate and downtrodden, I don't have time for them. Therefore, a real devotee of the Lord, he is the welfare worker of everyone. And the supreme example of this was Lord Nityananda himself. When he would travel through the countryside teaching people to take to the holy name of Lord Sri Krishna, he did not discriminate. He made no discrimination between who was rich and who was poor, between who was literate and who was illiterate, between who was a man and who was a woman, who was old and who was young. He made no discrimination between who was famous and who was infamous. He did not even make the slightest discrimination between who is sinful and who is pious, who is religious and who is irreligious. Sometimes today people are very proud of living in India and coming from Brahmin families and being very pious and never breaking the principles. And sometimes they're very difficult to preach to these people because they already know it all. Yes, they've never eaten meat, they've never had illicit sex, they've never taken intoxication, they have never gambled, they've been doing the puja since their birth, and they're very proud of it. They think that I'm very spiritually advanced. And what can you tell me? After all, I'm born in this culture. Recently, we were in Tompkins Square Park, the place where Prabhupada established Krishna consciousness. A place where practically the entire population is either drug addicts, alcoholics, or Brahmins of India in many ways. Because although they're addicted to illicit sex, they're addicted to drugs, they're addicted to alcohol, they gamble their whole life away. And they know nothing but meat eating since their birth, since the conception in the womb. They're basically suffering. They realize they're downtrodden. They realize that they're in hopeless conditions of life, material nature smashing them, and they just want, when they hear the message of Krishna consciousness, they just want to offer respect, they want to touch your feet, they want to just, we're so thankful, we're so grateful that you're so kindly giving us another way to live. And they'll chant, and they'll dance, and they'll read the books, and they'll preach, and they'll help, and many of them will surrender their lives. So who's more advanced? Therefore, Lord Nityananda did not see the difference between those who are sinful and those who are not sinful. He saw that every living entity is potentially a pure devotee of Krishna, and therefore I have to give everybody the chance. Not that I reject the rich for the poor, nor do I reject the poor for the rich. In fact, he was even merciful to the animals, the lower species. Give them prasad too. They deserve it as much as anybody else. This is the quality of a saintly person. He's equal to all. He simply wants to be the welfare servant of every living being. He wants to be the servant of the servant of the servant. He wants to be the humble servant of every creature on earth. He sees that the soul is longing for Krishna within everyone's heart. And all material qualifications that people are so busy praising and blaming people for, it is all just an illusion. It's meaningless. Therefore, if a person comes to kill me, if a person comes to offer flowers to me, I do not see a difference in that person. I only see my service to that person. This is the way a saintly person thinks. My service is to somehow or other try to bring that person to chant the holy names. What he does to me, what his mentality is, that's between him and Krishna. My service is to try to get him somehow or other to accept the name of Krishna in his life. The translation of today's verse is, different people are of different mentalities. Therefore, it is not my business either to praise them or to blaspheme them. I only desire their welfare, hoping that they will agree to become one with the Super Soul, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna. Therefore, a devotee is the well-wisher of everyone. He is simply praying for everyone's welfare. He doesn't see anyone as his friend or enemy. He sees everyone as his Prabhu, his master. That is Krishna consciousness. Is there any questions?
Is that a saintly person, he does not differentiate. He just tries to see other person offering flowers or maybe doing whatever. At the same time, you mentioned earlier how the sadhus are pleased by sincere seva attitude. So obviously the distinction has to be made between somebody is offering flowers for love and devotion, somebody is offering just for show, somebody who is just indifferent.
The sadhu is not discriminating. The sadhu wants to, in the sense that the sadhu wants to see everybody like that. That is the only quality that a sadhu appreciates, because he knows that is the only quality that is pleasing to Krishna. That is the only quality that really brings one to spiritual advancement. That quality is opulence on the spiritual level. Material opulence to a saintly person, Krishna says he sees no difference between gold and the dirt on the ground. People are very anxious to decorate themselves with gold rings and gold jewelry. But a sadhu sees that there's no difference between a clump of dirt, which everybody can just pick up and throw away, and the beautiful gold ornaments that people are taking such care to decorate themselves with. There's no difference. Huh? Because he says he sees that material qualifications have nothing to do with reality of the soul. They cannot bring you closer to Krishna. The only thing that can bring you closer to Krishna is the humble attitude of service. Therefore, he sees that humility, that service attitude, as the most glorious opulence, and he appreciates that. He praises that in another. He doesn't praise any other quality. The chanting is a prayer to engage us in his service. The service is always there. The service is eternal. There are 9 processes of devotional service, and chanting is service. In and of itself, it is service. Sravanam Kirtanam Vishno. It is the second item of the 9 processes of devotional service. And through chanting, our heart becomes purified. And in that purified state, then our every word, our every thought, and our every deed is naturally and spontaneously in the service of the Krishna and in the service of his devotees. In one sense, then everything we do becomes our chanting. Whatever we do, we are glorifying Krishna. Huh? Yes?
But this is not, this question is not connected with today's lecture, but you mentioned this word, I mean, phrase, Ishvara Sarva Bhutanam Pradesha Vishnadishtari. While talking with one person, I remembered, and that he said, if the heart is, I mean, the place of where the soul stays. Now, with the attachment to heart and machine, they have the artificial transplant, and the person still lives for at least 3 days or 4 days or a year or whatever, but he still lives. So where does the soul go there? So the heart is taken off and then an artificial transplant is put.
Srila Prabhupada explained that the heart is just the place of residence. The soul is the person. At the time of a heart transplant, that really has nothing to do with the person's existence within that particular body. In other words, if you have the karma to live in a particular body for so long, then they can change the hearts. The soul just goes from one heart to the next. As long as he's destined to stay in that body, then you can change the heart 1,000,000 times. Right? That has nothing to do with the karma of the living entity. When it's time for him to go, this heart or that heart, he goes. Huh? Every cell in your body is completely changing over 7 years. That means you've already had, how old are you?
28.
That means you've already had 4 hearts. Right? As far as the cellular makeup of your heart has gone through 4 complete transformations in your life. But the soul remains through all the changes of the body. The body's always changing. By nature's ways, it changes very gradually. The cells die and a new cell is born and an old cell dies. A new cell is born and an old cell dies. And this process is, your whole body is being completely replenished of its old cells in a gradual form. So a heart transplant is just a more sudden change. Your heart, you've had cellularly, you've had 4 hearts in your life, correct? You agree? So rather than going through a 7-year heart transplant, they just do it all at once. But the soul remains there. You can give it another heart. The soul just, okay, I'm supposed to be here. Krishna just takes the soul. Okay, they want to change your heart. You're supposed to be in this body. So Krishna just takes the soul into the next heart that they put in. No big thing. The heart is just a residence. Sometimes you're evicted from one apartment and you go to another one. Right? So this is not very difficult to understand. Yes.
I thought it was a Mahabharata, but I just mentioned that he was a Gandharva in his previous lifetime and produced some others to begin with. So is he actually a eternally liberated?
This is all his Leela. Actually, Prabhupada said that there is the Nitya Siddha, the Kripa Siddha, and the Sadhan Siddha. A Nitya Siddha is one who has never been conditioned by material nature. He's always been in his constitutional position. And sometimes those souls, by the order of God, descend into this world to help the Lord with his mission. And there is the Kripa Siddha, like Jagai and Madhai, where they really had no qualifications whatsoever, but by the very, very rare mercy of the Lord, they attained perfection without doing anything. And there's the Sadhan Siddha, the person who's conditioned to the modes of material nature, to the repetition of birth and death, but by associating with saintly persons and performing spiritual disciplines, they purify their lives, and through that they attain the perfection of life. So these are the three categories. But factually, whether you're a Sadhan Siddha or a Kripa Siddha, once you attain the Siddha position, you become a Nitya Siddha. He says there's really no difference because it was all just a dream. Huh? Just like now you're awake. Now someone who's never been asleep, he's always been awake, but someone who's been asleep, when he wakes up, is he really any different than a person who's never went to sleep? Once he's awake, he's awake. His dream is over. So really, you're in the position of a Nitya Siddha again. So once you attain that position of perfect Krishna consciousness, you understand that you've always been a perfect Krishna conscious person, but you were dreaming for a little while. Huh? So now I've woken up. The soul is always perfectly Krishna conscious, but sometimes it's dreaming, it's something different. Huh? So we have to understand that these personalities in the Srimad Bhagavatam are not ordinary personalities. Krishna has orchestrated many of these people's lives in such a way just to give transcendental instructions for the world to follow. So thank you very much. Hare Krishna.